You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With the pump fake and a one dribble inside to the long two, and he makes it. That's been his game his whole career. But look at him smiling. We go, my bad. The long two. My bad.
Welcome to another episode of The Long Two. I am Pete Rogers. He is Natty Wallach. And we are a Carmelo Stanthony podcast, but, you know, occasionally talk fantasy basketball. Natty, how you doing?
Howdy, what's up, dude? Doing just fine. And I'd just like to get a head start and say that Carmelo Anthony was the best fantasy sleeper this year.
Good. Yep. Yep.
Be
that's
believed.
On brand. That makes
believed,
sense.
Be.
Yep. That's on brand. Yeah, we've got 16 some odd games left. I think 17, actually. And I figured, and Natty wants me to stress this, I, Peter Rogers, figured now would be a great time to talk some NBA awards for the year. So without further ado, we'll get right into it. And it's time for our Suck It, Bill Simmons, way too early NBA award picks. I've heard rivalries are good for podcast business, for listenership. So I figured, why not pick a beef with Bill Simmons and try to see if we can garner some listenership through that.
Well, as a Pistons fan and a Bad Boys ultra fan, I would just like to say that we tend to be very polite and try to convince others rather
yes.
than
that, that
jump right
like
into
you
conflict. Yeah. Absolutely.
That
prefer to
like
be clean and nice and polite. You know, you go ahead, have your basket shot attempt right now. That's
I
fine.
Feel like when
and
people
we'll
describe Ben Wallace, that's the first thing they say.
Absolutely. You've never met a nicer, more polite and civil gentleman than Big Ben Wallace.
I'm sure
he apologized
like a
every time
person.
He stuffed somebody.
Absolutely rejected. I feel like Ben Wallace could be one of those people who off the court is just like a really nice dude. And then on the court is a fucking menace. Like Bill Russell was that way, where he would just like work himself into like a frenzy of bloodlust and then just go out and eviscerate people. But off the court, he's such a nice guy.
Yeah, I feel like we tend to cast like defense first dudes. It's like we're hard on the court, but then
right.
we're just like big care bears off of it. And I do sometimes wonder about that because it's like some of, like Kobe was, you know,
Kobe
super
was,
intense.
And was a fucking menace off the court too.
But then he seemed to turn like mellow as soon as he retired.
Right. Right.
And like same with Kevin Garnett, sort of.
sort of. Kevin Garnett still is likes to be hard.
I mean, that's just how some people are wired. And with Big Ben, he had that strange thing going on with his hair when like the NBA was like, you can do this, you can't do that,
yeah.
and all this other bullshit. And meanwhile, he's this like sort of short center who's the best defensive player in the NBA for basically over a 5-year stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew, and he knew, that he was limited offensively, but he also knew, I'm better at defense than almost anybody is at anything else. And
yeah.
so it was like leaning into that made so much sense. And he really just struck me as, I obviously he played hard, but it was also just that he played so smart. Mm-hmm. And he's just, it's sort of like Draymond, like
yeah.
you know, Draymond
sure.
has a tough reputation, but he's also probably one of the 10 smartest dudes in basketball.
Yeah. Should we actually get to some awards?
Let's do it.
We'll start with obviously the MVP because it's the most valuable award. It's the most valuable player. There used to be no debate on this. Now there seems like there might be a slight debate, but I will, on this way too early podcast, in spite
thank
of
you.
exactly in spite of Bill Simmons, my MVP pick is still Giannis. I'm going by, even if the Bucks don't win 70 plus games, which I still think they will. Giannis is the most valuable player on that team and in the league, because without him, that team maybe wins 50-ish games. Like, if you take LeBron, because it's now seems like a Giannis-LeBron race. And if you take LeBron off the Lakers, they're worse, obviously. But they still have Anthony Davis, which and veteran role players. And we've seen that team be fine. Like, without Giannis, it's Chris Middleton. And is Chris Middleton good enough to...
Don't talk shit. We know what happens when we doubt Chris Middleton.
This is true. This is true. And I would hate for Chris Middleton to listen to this podcast, internalize all of this I say, and then bust it out on the Celtics at some point. But yeah,
he'll win MVP.
Right.
Just exactly. Because of this.
He's about to put together the most absurd 16 games of in NBA history. But and not only just because Giannis is, you know, his value in the Bucks. He's also, I mean, he's averaging 29.6 points. He's averaging 13.7 boards, 5.8 assists, and what, two stocks a game. And you know what I love to see, Natty?
What's that?
30% from three, shooting almost five attempts per game. I love to see that shit. So I think I understand he just won it last year, and the narrative could be there for LeBron. It's quickly establishing itself. I'm still on the Giannis train.
Tough but fair. Giannis is averaging 30.9 minutes per game. And I am on the other side. I think that this is LeBron. I think he's going to win. Well, actually, let me back up a sec. Sorry. Whichever team wins 70 games, if either team does, sure, I think that person, LeBron or Giannis, will win the MVP. If both teams win 70 or if neither wins 70, then I think it will be LeBron, because Giannis has not played nearly as much. And Giannis's on-off numbers aren't as good as LeBron. And I don't think they're as good as Chris Paul's either. Like, Chris Paul has a ridiculous, like, plus 10 on off, like, when he's not
Chris
playing.
Chris Paul's amazing resurgence season, which Natty wrote about, which you should go read on faketeams.com.
Yeah, and a bunch of other people wrote about him this week,
too. Nope. Natty, we don't talk about anyone on this podcast other than Fake Teams writers, and when we're throwing shade at Bill Simmons.
Well, I do think that the reason that a bunch of people were talking about Chris Paul this week is because they were thinking about the MVP and they were looking at all of the teams, because they're just like you and I, where it's like, yeah, it's Bron and Giannis, nobody else. And they're like, oh, wait a second, Oklahoma City,
yeah,
like, they could get home court advantage that in the first round. Like, they're one of the best teams in the NBA. Maybe we should look at Chris Paul's numbers and see what's going on there. And all and every single one of his numbers is amazing. He's one of the most clutch players in the league. But to return to Giannis and Bron, I do think it's a neck and neck race. Some people on this podcast have been talking about LeBron being the MVP all season long and never bought the Anthony Davis bullshit.
My goodness, who is that?
I don't know. I think it was a guest. Yeah, we booked them a long time ago.
Yes, the many guests that we have on this show.
Exactly. But Bron has, I mean, this is going to go back to like, what is an MVP, but Bron has had to play more for his team. And I just think that the Bucks, it's not like the Bucks are still good without Giannis, or that, you know, they could still, I think they could win a first round series against the eighth seed without Giannis, but like, that's as far as they could go. The Bucks supporting cast is better than we think it is. And I just feel like LeBron has the narrative at this point.
Yeah, that I agree with.
And, you know, it's when you start counting up all these little differences, I do think that there's more weight in LeBron than for Giannis. But having said that, if Giannis wins 70 games and LeBron doesn't, that matters.
Yeah.
That matters big time.
Yeah. No, I think we have both expressed the right argument for those two guys. Like, I think that's who the race comes down to. And I think you're right that it's first person to 70 wins. And if both guys go, then I think LeBron probably wins it. just because the narrative is there and because people are going to be like, you know, you get the age aspect come in where it's like Giannis is 25 years old. Mm-hmm. He's got so much, you know, basketball in front of him. He's going to win plenty of, you know, MVPs down the road. He just won one last year. This is like LeBron's final chance, really. You know, we say that, but he could also play another 10 years and we wouldn't like bat an eye at that. Totally. But, you know, this would put him at five, which tied, you know, he's then second most in NBA history, I think, tied with, you know, the esteemed elite of the Basketball Association. So I think honestly, whoever wins between LeBron or Giannis, it's not as if one of the, you know, the other is more deserving. Like these are both guys have been balling out all year long. And it's just a matter of whose narrative is better.
And they're both on the number one teams.
Right.
Like both of these teams seem dominant. And I think a lot of people had the Bucks as the number one seed before the season started, but were less sure of the Lakers. Mm-hmm. Like the Lakers roster just didn't seem as nearly as complete or geometrically pleasing as the Bucks roster did. Nice. And it still doesn't really. I also think that there will be a Kobe effect and that if there's, you know, out there thinking 50% for LeBron for Giannis and they, you know, 70 games doesn't enter into it, then I think Kobe will weight the scales and it'll feel good for people to honor LeBron as the new face of the Lakers and in the same season that they lost the old face.
Yeah. Let's move on to Rookie of the Year, who we had
RJ
talked
Barrett.
About. We
what are you laughing at?
Sorry, I shouldn't throw any shade at the Knicks. We talked about this on an earlier show a while ago, and we were both thinking like it's what Zion would have to do in order to take it from Ja Morant, given how much time he missed. And Natty, I have to tell you, I kind of think Zion's done that.
Dude,
it's hard not to look at Zion's numbers since he's at, you know, since he's been playing and be like, it's going to be really like, how does he not win Rookie of the Year?
So he'll have like 35 games under his belt when the season is over. And if he keeps scoring 23 points per game, then I kind of feel like if the Pelicans actually make the playoffs,
right,
then you have to give it to
him. He's locked and loaded. If he leads this Pelicans team, you know, to dethrone Ja Morant and the Grizzlies from the eighth seed, then it's all but his. I mean, his numbers, I'm looking at them right now, 23.6 points, 6.8 rebounds, 2.2 assists. He's averaging one and some change stocks per game. But the thing, like, 46% from three, yes, he's taking, like, an attempt a game. Yeah. But 58% from the field, 29 minutes, 19.
Dude, 62 true shooting percentage.
Right. And just the impact that he immediately had on that team. It's hard not to be like, yep, this is exactly the Rookie of the Year Zion that we thought he was going to be. And he's come straight into the league and has done everything we could have imagined and more.
That team looks like it has such a bright future, you know?
Yes. Like, which is beautiful. And I understand, like, honestly, maybe the NBA rigged the lottery balls to help out the Pelicans, but I'm okay with it. Like, they got their arm twisted to get Anthony Davis out of there. But it's wonderful to see the fact that this team who traded Anthony Davis, got back pieces. Those pieces have been thriving. Mm-hmm. And you pair that with Zion, and everything just works well. They all work very well together. This is a team that if they can keep this Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Zion Williams core together, this team has a huge future in front of them.
I really want them to keep JJ's playoff streak alive.
Yep.
That would be incredible.
I mean, you talk about who's
really
been on
seem
the
like they need him.
Yeah. You talk about who's been on the LeBron MVP train the earliest. We've been on the Pelicans playoff train
for
since
sure.
The beginning of time.
He it's so funny how well this team is coached under such turmoil. Like, Alvin Gentry's just done a great job.
Yeah.
And even though the win-loss record doesn't really reflect it, doesn't really reflect how good the team is, you can tell that all of the young guys are advancing steadily. They're mm-hmm. all improving. I mean, Brandon Ingram looks fucking wet. He is yeah. so goddamn good. I'm so happy that that happened. And Lonzo has looked a lot better. I still feel like I would trade him before I traded Drew, but he looks great. And the whole team, they're just fun to watch, they you know? Are. And that's just a really big point in their favor going forward. Like, they'll be on national TV all the time.
Oh my God. They're going to be, yes, yeah. They're going to be like, hopefully with better results, but they're going to be this year's Browns. We're like the Browns, yeah, yeah. We're like the up-and-coming team that everyone's like, yes, put them in all the primetime games. Then they ultimately shat the bed, but that's because of the Browns. But the Pelicans are going to be in every primetime game next year because this squad is just, they're young and they're too exciting. And with Zion having a full year under his belt, they're going to be all over it.
Yeah, like they would comfortably be a playoff team, I think, if he had played all year with these numbers.
I don't see how they couldn't be.
And it's a little bit, you know, like, oh, look at the brand new thing when for the first three quarters of the season or the first half of the season, we were saying, oh, Ja Morant is incredible.
Sure.
And Ja Morant is incredible.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just that, like, if the Pelicans actually make the play... Zion looks like he could be like 17 tiers above Ja Morant's ceiling.
Yeah.
And if the Pelicans make the playoffs, then that will be proved. Like, this is almost like a college setting for these two. It's like, yeah, whichever one of your teams advances more, like, that's who's the better player is. That's how we're going to decide it. And it's just awesome. I didn't look up how many games they play against each other going forward. Should have done that. That's going to be must-watch television.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Let's move on to Defensive Player of the Year. Natty, who's your pick for this coveted award?
I think it comes down to Giannis and AD, and I'm going with Giannis. He just changes the entire basketball court. And, I mean, you can use my argument from before he doesn't play as much and use it against me saying this now. But purely as a defensive player, the whole game changes when Giannis is on the court. He can guard everybody. Yeah. And that is, you know, that's the most valuable F.
Do you want some high level stats?
Oh, sure. Give them to me.
Some advanced
numbers.
Give me
like some DRA for basketball players.
Let me hit you with some defensive opponent field goal percentage.
Sure. Zero. Like, they don't even try. It's just zero field goal attempts. Yeah.
Giannis is not allowed a single bucket this entire season. No, he,
I believe it.
He leads the league in people and players who've played at least 50 games. He leads the league 36%. And according to NBA.com advanced stats, he's got 10.5 defensive field goals attempts per game that he deals with. His field goal differential is best in the league. He's 45.8% and he's allowing 36.1. I do want to give a shout out because I gave him much shade to start the season and he's on my fantasy team, so I got to give him love. Rudy Gobert is one, two, three, four, fifth in the league in lowest defensive field goal allowed. He's allowing 40% and he's going up against 20.4 attempts, according to, again, NBA advanced stats. So he's by far seeing the most shot attempts naturally as a center guarding the paint, but is also allowing one of the lowest field goals. But he's also won the last, like, what, 3 years?
Yeah, and they haven't looked great. I wonder if he's just getting tired because everyone's running past Bojan Bogdanovic like right into him. The Jazz just look discombobulated, and it's like three of their parts are working at any given time, but then the other two like plummet. And you know, I don't think that you can give Defensive Player of the Year to Gobert when there's this bad taste in everybody's mouth over like what has happened in Utah this year.
Sure.
Like they just, I mean, all due credit to Bill Simmons. It's like what the eye test does work. Like Giannis is a better defender this year.
Matty, this is
than,
not how we build the rivalry.
Gobert.
By starting,
I know,
off
I'm so sorry. It's Midwest.
And then immediately.
You're
going
to have
like,
to get used to this living in Ann Arbor, man. It's like, no. You go
no.
ahead. Please.
I'm bringing
After
the East
you.
Coast asshole to Ann Arbor.
There you go. Boston. Yeah.
Boston. Well, speaking of Boston, let's go to Most Improved because there's only one man who deserves to win the Most Improved Award.
Jaylen Brown.
Jaylen motherfucking Brown.
It has
His
to
best
be.
Best friend, Jason Tatum.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not really like you could go with someone like Christian Wood, some dude that came out of nowhere.
No,
but
you couldn't do that.
That's easy.
Dumb, it's a dumb take.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, technically, like all of his numbers.
Nope, Maddie, this is dumb. Stop.
You're right. I'm sorry. Also, I think you could make a case for LeBron because he changed
Shut
the
up.
Type of player he
Get
is.
Out of here. Shut up.
How about this? How about Russell Westbrook? Who improved his efficiency by a lot just because he, you know, decided to play like a center sort of. No, but you're right. It has to be Tatum.
It's the guy who's averaging 23 a game this season, who's just gone on a tear recently. So that number is even higher if you look in recent games.
Yeah.
Was 15 a game last year. And he's shooting more attempts. He's shooting at a better percentage. Like his whole game has changed, and he's also fundamentally sound and making huge plays on the defensive end. He is the guy who went from, all right, let's see this guy reach, you know, the highs we think, to this is a budding superstar and one of, you know, on his way to being a top 10 player in the league.
He looks better than he did in the playoffs a couple
Back
years
in
ago.
In his rookie year,
Yeah, which is what everybody was hoping. People that watch the Celtics have sort of been waiting for this moment where like finally just sort of bursts out of his shell like raptor in Jurassic Park. And it's like, okay, nice. Yeah, this is an apex predator. And the Celtics... while they can definitely work when he's off the court, just because they have so many interchangeable people, because they're such a well-constructed team, you can tell, like, if you put another team, he would take them to the playoffs. He just looks like that kind of player. I would say, though, that I think my number two wouldn't be that far behind Tatum, and it's Brandon Ingram.
Yeah.
And I think that's just, both of these extremely young players look like they're going to be worthy successors to the current faces of the NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird to think that those players like won't be in the playoffs all the time over the next decade if they keep playing like this or get better.
Totally. I mean, and we'll talk more about Brandon Ingram, spoiler alert, because we're going to get into best fantasy sleeper, but, and do some fantasy awards, but it is on some level. Like, I love the fact that he got out of LA and was able to blossom and is being his best self in New Orleans. But you also can't help but think that wouldn't it be great for that Celtics Lakers rivalry to be having Brandon Ingram and Jason Tatum like ascending simultaneously at the same. And you're just like these two guys, it's the Magic and Larry where hopefully you're getting multiple final games out of each other. You know, it would have been fun. Instead, we get Tatum and Kuzma.
Yeah. Who's a fantasy bust, basically.
Oh, yeah.
I will say this. I do kind of think the Pelicans match up pretty well with the Celtics.
Oh,
I don't know how you defend Zion.
No, I throw Enes Kanter at him.
Right, but you have to actually physically throw him at him.
Right,
like you're just picking up chairs and like whatever you can grab.
No, the only man who could have covered him was Yabusele, but then we got rid of him.
And you know what? When you even have to say that sentence, that's a bad sign.
Yeah. Or
but,
somehow,
you know, having said that, who in the NBA can
or somehow Marcus Smart is going to be able to just like shut him down, and you're just going to be like, Marcus, stop this, stop breaking our minds.
I mean, Marcus Smart thinks he's the best player on every team, and that's just awesome.
That's incredible.
God damn, what a great dude. But yeah, it is. I do kind of feel like it's just a two-man race, and I'm just saying that because I love Brandon Ingram so much. Like, is there anybody else in the league that you think could, like, who would even be your three? Like, I think at that point you're just taking dudes that, like, burst out of nowhere, like Davis Bertans, you know? Sure. Or
I literally picked this because I was like, Jason Tatum needs an award, and I was like, I'm not thinking any more about it.
How about Chris Middleton? Would he be top four?
Yeah, no, he wouldn't. Shut up.
I know, but like we were all. I mean, I said before the season, I'd rather have.
No,
Rodman.
You're right. Yeah, no, he could. He could. I mean, at least get a sniff at it.
Yeah, I think that'll be an interesting top five when they release the numbers because it'll show us like what kind of improvement people are valuing right now.
Right. 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 Yep. All right, let's talk some fantasy awards. Before that, we're going to take a quick ad break.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, we're back. We're going to talk some fantasy awards now. We covered MVP, Rookie of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year. Obviously, you all knew that, unless for some reason you decided to cut to the middle of the show and tune in. I don't know.
Start with the ad.
Right, exactly. Or maybe you were just like, all right, we can't listen to the early parts because we're Bill Simmons stands, and now we're going to listen to the fantasy stuff, which this is still in the shade. We're still throwing shade at you, Bill. Best fantasy sleeper. I have three guys who I was kind of picking from, and they're all at different spectrums of, not all at different spectrums, but they're kind of in different realms of ADP and final standings. I was thinking between Hassan Whiteside, Brandon Ingram, who we've talked about, and then the guy who I think I'm ultimately going to go with as the best fantasy sleeper is a guy who came entirely out of nowhere to be currently, what? Where is he? He's currently 38th in ESPN player rater, and he was undrafted unless you were somehow a freakishly avid Hornets fan. Devontae Graham.
Sure.
Came absolutely out of nowhere and is a top 50 player, top 40 player in fantasy this year. You got to give the man some love. So I'll give him Brandon Ingram and Hassan Whiteside. Both are like top 20 guys and were drafted behind outside of the top 50. I think Whiteside was like 65 on average and Ingram was in the hundreds, but an undrafted player making his way into a top 50 fantasy player. Clearly Devontae Graham is winning it for me.
For sure. And there's more than a few of those guys this year, like Bertans, like we mentioned, Duncan Robinson, another undrafted dude.
Your boy.
Go Blue. And there were some, you know, higher owned players, like Kelly Oubre had a fucking great year and outperformed his ADP. And OG Anunoby looks like he's getting better. I mean, Marcus Smart outperformed his ADP, obviously, just like we kept telling people he would. Mm-hmm. So did Brolo. Bob Covington, man. Like, he, that's, it's
that's your
nice
boy.
That he's in Houston.
You live or die with the Bob.
That trade, like, him and Malik Beasley, like, improved their value so much with those trades. It's unreal. I think, though, who I'm going to say is CP3, because I just wrote about him. And also, he is the only guy in the top 13 of ESPN Basic for the season, the player rater for the season. He's the only guy in the top 13 that was taken after pick 50 in average draft position. Like, he's returned. He was taken after Thomas Bryant in some drafts, you know, like no one really believed in him to be an elite offensive or fantasy force anymore. And God damn, has he proven them wrong? He's so fucking great. They play a three-guard lineup. Like, they play a weird style that doesn't really get talked about because Houston went nuts and, like, there's rookies everywhere and, Giannis versus Bron.
Yeah, they've also been doing it for the whole, you know, like, the Hornets thing got so, everyone went apeshit for that because they, in the middle of the season, were like, all right, buy Clint Capella, we're just going to go small. Whereas the Thunder have been for the whole season doing this three guard lineup, and it's been working. And it's also because this is what, you know, when you lose Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and James Harden, like, Oklahoma City, not exactly a mainstay or you know, one of the premier franchises. So it kind of falls by the wayside because it thinks, but they're not. They're one of the best teams in the West, and it all comes down to CP3, who, if you took a bet on him in fantasy, he certainly paid that off handsomely.
And OKC has had such a plethora of players of elite standing go through them since they moved to Oklahoma City. It is nuts. Like you mentioned, Westbrook, Harden, KD, Paul George, Serge Ibaka,
Carmelo Anthony,
obviously, and now CP3, along with Danilo Gallinari, who's a real player, and SGA just looks absolutely amazing. Looks
incredible.
It's really a testament to the front office that they've had so many good players on that squad in such a short amount of time. And, you know, all due credit to Billy Donovan, the Thunder's coach, who I never really liked, but this is amazing. This is a good coaching job. It is, you're playing an unorthodox style and you're winning with it. That comes down to coaching.
Yeah.
And also, like, the national media all sort of thought that the Thunder wouldn't be a playoff team. So all of the stories about Chris Paul before the season were, oh, he loves being back in OKC, you know, because of Katrina and like all this other stuff. And it's like no one was taking them seriously, even though they had at least three legitimate players. They look like a dangerous playoff team. Like, I do not want to play them in the playoffs. They sort of feel like the Pacers in that regard, if the Pacers were actually healthy, where it's just like tough-ass guards, man. Like, it's real tough to play and a strong interior defender. They're going to be a tough out in the playoffs.
They are. And you know CP3 is going to have some games where he just gets his shit done and keeps them in it.
Dude, and if he stays healthy through the playoffs, that'll be the first time in a couple of years. And, you know, if he hadn't gotten hurt in Houston, who knows what would have happened. But he just makes every team lethally dangerous. And on any given night, he'll be the best player on the court.
If we're going to talk fantasy sleepers, we got to talk fantasy busts. Natty, who is your biggest bust for the year?
This is tough. It's sad. You know?
LeBron? Really?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Blake. He was garbage.
Trash.
I have more than, like, people that got hurt, like Kyrie. Like,
sure. That's... I was trying to not pick Kyrie, like Joel, Ben, like guys.
Totally. Yeah. Marc Gasol.
Yeah.
I'm also going to include Mike Conley in that because I just don't feel like.
Okay.
He's done so poorly for the first half that I think he was injured. I don't want to blame him for that. Okay. But he just looks so... I mean, it's 13 points per game, 4 assists per game, and 40% field goal percentage on the year.
Yeah.
And he was a top 75 player in drafts. Kuzma, like, he's shooting under 30% from three. He was number 89 in ADP. That really sucks. Josh Richardson has not nearly as good as I had hoped he would be in Philadelphia. But my biggest bust is one of my fantasy boyfriends.
Oh, no.
He's a guy I've believed in for a long time.
Let's hear it.
It's another Jazz. It's Joe Ingles. He was drafted in the top 100, and on the year he's averaging 9 points per game, but with 5 dimes and 4 boards and almost a 43-point percentage. But it's just like from night to night, he can be dreadful to barely helpful, and then he'll score 20 points once. I really thought that he was going to be an instrumental and vital force for the Utah Jazz. And when they've started him, he has been. They are better when he starts. But he's just been a bust this year. Like, you have to face facts. He's not been nearly as good as I had hoped he would be.
Yeah. Nope, I totally agree with him. And he's been a guy, last year I had great success picking him up off waivers, and
he
put together a great season. And then this year I had him a couple times, and every time, you know, he'd give me one good game and then would just kind of do a whole bunch of average. And you're like, nope, I'm sorry, Joe. This isn't worthy of a roster spot. And you're right. he looked really good. He looked super promising. It looked like he had this role that he was thriving in, and somehow that has all changed and he's just not as productive.
Like, he's a worthy assist streamer. Yeah. Like, if you're in the playoffs or about to go into the playoffs, he's a useful player to have in fantasy, just as a guy that can give you dimes.
Sure.
But it's, man, it, for having a roster spot the whole year, it has not been fun. But I love him. He's one of my boyfriends, and I will never give up on him, ever.
My guy drafted average ADP 45. And he is, I last time I checked, and I had it up and then I closed it. Classic Boston. I don't think he's even in the top like 150 right now.
Oh, Jesus. Wait, who is it?
Lauri Markkanen.
Oh, the finisher, of course.
The finisher. Yeah. Some of it is injury, but some of it is just not knowing what to do.
The genius Jim Boylens.
Man. Jim Boylens. Ruining everyone except for Zach LaVine.
Yeah, but even he doesn't want to be there.
But I mean, well, Zach LaVine physically doesn't want to be there, but at least he's still putting together a solid fantasy production. Lauri Markkanen, it's a bummer because obviously with a 40, I mean, top 50 ADP, he had some high expectations this season. And you just,
oh, yeah,
you want to see young players develop. And he seemed like the next in the ever growing trend of European big men who can shoot threes, and had a soft touch from outside, but
yeah,
and that just hasn't come to fruition this year. And if you drafted him, I mean, that is a return that is absolutely soul crushing. And much like the whole entire Bulls of season, a wild disappointment.
I still feel like if that team had ever been fully healthy at the same time and had even a mediocre NBA coach guiding them, they would have been a lot better. The finisher was supposed to be like a B+ unicorn, you know, right, like Kristaps, right, without the blocks. And everyone, I feel like, sort of had a good feeling about the new baby Bulls, just because it felt like the team fit, you know, Wendell Carter's in the middle and Lauri, yep, Markkanen's outside, yep, and Otto Porter's there and Zach, and it just, and Tomas Satoransky. But the whole thing has been a complete and utter disaster, which is awesome, and I love it. Go Pistons. Fuck you, Chicago. This is awesome.
Can I fix Chicago this offseason in one simple, please, move?
Actually, I'd rather you didn't, but go ahead. As a Midwesterner,
yeah,
I acknowledge you have to.
Right. Thank you. Fire Boylen.
Oh, really?
I know. Shocker. Go hire Kenny Atkinson, who's a fucking, ooh, good coach. Like, I don't know what Brooklyn's doing here. Call it the Kyrie effect of just getting everyone out. But Kenny Atkinson, look what he did last year with D'Angelo Russell, who looked like an absolute mess coming from LA. Fixed that project, got Spencer Dinwiddie playing well, Caris LeVert. Like, he took all of that young talent and developed that team into the frisky playoff team that ultimately KD and Kyrie were like, hey, this could be fun. So if the Bulls want to like fix everything, get a restart with their young talent, I'm just saying one easy move, go get Kenny Atkinson. The guy is a good coach. He shouldn't have been fired from the Nets. I just fixed you, Chicago.
I would not like that because he is absolutely an upgrade over Genius Jim. I have read some conflicting reports that maybe Atkinson left more than he was fired. I know that everyone's saying
no. I think that's partially true. I mean, honestly, I don't blame him. But yeah, I think that was. It seemed like one of those mutually decided to part ways.
I mean, I don't remember something like this happening really since like Steve Fisher had to take over the Michigan basketball team right before we won the title in 89, where a coach just like dropped out right on the cusp or in the playoffs. It's so strange that I feel like something else is going on. And when I first heard it, I thought, oh man, this is like some sort of bullshit player mutiny. And I don't know if it's coming from Kyrie or KD or one of the players that's actually, sure, playing, but like, no one should want to fire their coach right before the playoffs. So it seemed a little fishy. Like, even if you don't like him, you're about to go to the playoffs. Like, right. You don't want some upset right away. Like, even some of the Bulls players defend Boylan, and they're garbage. They should be throwing him under every single bus available. But Atkinson has proven that he can, if not get the most out of players, at least have them play better and play smarter and sort of learn the fundamentals. He's done great work with Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Joe Harris,
right?
Jared Allen.
Yeah. It seems like an easy fix, because I don't feel like anything, it's not any of those single players. Like, you want to, obviously you want to get the best out of them, but it's not as if, like what we said, there was a lot of hype about the young Bulls because they're a well-constructed team from a player standpoint, like from a skill set, right?
Yeah.
It works. It's not the Cavaliers where you've got seven big men who all just crowd the paint, or you've got the Knicks where it's like, we're going to sign all of these power forwards and just not know how to play them. It's a well-constructed roster, and it's just a coach who doesn't know what the fuck he's doing, and seems like an easy fix to get a coach who does know what the fuck he's doing, and suddenly, guess what the Bulls are? A playoff team.
Yeah. Having Boylan as a coach is an own goal on their part.
Yes.
Like, he's clearly limiting the team. And even if he was a nice guy, and even if he seemed like he had some good ideas rather than the stupid bullshit, like, pretentious old school basketball stuff that he does, it still shows that he is not getting anything out of this team when they are in the East and they should be beating a lot. I don't think that they're a playoff team, especially with the injuries, but they should be beating a lot more of these teams. Like, they just don't look good.
Totally. Before we do studs and duds for the week, quickly, Natty, gut feeling, who wins it all this year?
Well, my guts are full of shit, so it's hard to trust them. I think it will be the Lakers.
Yeah.
I think that the way the West is playing out is going to really benefit them, because I think that in the West, the eighth seed, it's not going to be an easy out, but it's going to be the easiest out of any of the teams in the Western bracket. And I sort of feel like Anthony Davis up against Giannis is one of the better options available out of all of the teams that could possibly be going against Giannis. And I do think that Giannis gets to the finals, but I think it'll show that they haven't been there before, and no one's smarter than LeBron.
Yeah.
He's lost a hell of a lot of finals, but he will be the smartest player on the court, the most experienced player on the court, and one of, if not the best player on the court. So I think that everything suggests that the Lakers have the advantage in the NBA right now.
Yep, I agree. It's the one year that I'm okay with them doing so. It would be a nice narrative to, with Kobe's passing.
Yeah.
And so I'm all right with it if it was the year to do so. Plus, they just look like the best team in the NBA right now.
I mean, the Clippers on any given night can look like they're one of the best teams.
But they're also any given night one injury away from that team. Just, yeah. Like, no one
can
stay healthy.
I've never thought that they're the overall best team. Right. I've never thought during the season, oh, shit, well, they'll definitely be able to beat the Bucks or the Lakers or the Toronto Raptors in a 7-game series. I just feel like they need another year. I think that's what they look like. They look like a team that needs another year with all the pieces playing together. And, you know, it's sort of weird to think that the Lakers roster construction is better than the Clippers. Like, I don't think that, but the Lakers just look better.
Yep, I agree. Let's quickly rattle off studs and duds, because Bert is getting restless in his crate. We do this every week. We've got someone who's going to have a strong fantasy week and someone who's going to have a bad fantasy week. Natty, still in the lead, 14-8, but I'm closing in just two behind, 12 and 10.
Nice. So
this is the week that I will ultimately get you because I have two very successful picks. My stud, the Sex Man. That's his new nickname that I've given him. Colin Sexton.
Why? Why? What happened?
Why? Did he do something? Colin Sexton, the Cavaliers play the Hornets and the Hawks this week. Those are both nice, easy matchups. And so I like him to continue as he is the best fantasy producer, well, best scoring producer on that team. He'll keep sure. putting up the buckets.
And he's looked better. Like, yep. He looks like he's going to be a real NBA player.
Give me your stud.
I'm sticking with the theme. Mm-hmm. I am going with the point guard, who has a tough schedule. He's going up against the Jazz, who have actually sort of looked not that great on defense recently, so maybe not. The T-Wolves, and then he gets an easy one against the, Wizards.
Yeah.
Right. But that's if it's him versus Beal, then we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think that Chris Paul smells blood in the water, and I think the Thunder are going to end up having a nice little run here at the end of the season.
I agree. Who's your dud?
My dud, I hate doing this, but you know, got to man up. This is a competition.
This is how you keep the lead, Natty.
I'm going with Joker as my dud. He has three away games over the course of the rest of the week. He is at Dallas, then at San Antonio, then at the Lakers.
Yeah, no fun.
Yeah, I think that's pretty tough. And even though I love Joker and he's magnificent and he should probably get some down ballot MVP votes this year as well, I just feel like those three teams are going to play him very smartly and very well.
I like it. I'm also going rather bold, or not bold, but also a big name guy. We talked about how the Bulls have been disappointing. Well, it doesn't get any easier for them. My dud this week is Zach LaVine. They play the Magic, the Heat, and the Celtics to round out the week. All of those are not ideal matchups. And while Zach has been doing pretty well this year, to say the least, I think he's going to struggle in this for the rest of the week.
You know, I thought about saying Kobe White as my dud because of that schedule.
Right, that schedule is not easy.
Yeah, but Kobe White just keeps getting shots, like, no matter what. I know.
The dude is on fire.
So, yeah, I'm glad we didn't have the same pick. Same team? Yeah.
Well, good on us. Excellent. Well, there you go. That's our way too early NBA award. Suck it, Bill Simmons.
You're great. Everybody loves you, and we support you 100%. Everybody wash your hands and be nice to your neighbor.
Yeah, definitely wash your hands. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast where you all get your podcast, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. We are there, the Fake Teams podcast channel, so that's what you want to look for. Follow us on Twitter at the Long Two Podcast. Make sure to tweet at Bill Simmons so we can get this rivalry going. Tell him that he doesn't know when NBA awards should be handed out. Natty, until next week, have a good one.
Extend Jim Boylan. Have a good week.
Yeah.